Right now, it is time for the Media Beat with David Tarachuk. David joins us on a Friday morning live. We rebroadcast it on Mondays right after our 12 noon news, also over the course of the weekend. He's also got his own website, which is themediabeat.us, and he's also a PBS television correspondent reporting on ethics and belief. And I believe that he is with us this morning. Good morning, David.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm reporting in from the media capital of the world, New York City, as ever, or almost always. Good to be with you again.
We have just a mixture of things to talk about. And one thing the president was wrong about before the election took place, he said after November 4th, you wouldn't be hearing about COVID anymore.
But unfortunately...
Every state is hearing about COVID as really, I guess the only term you can put is it is out of control, and even the deaths now are rising to horrific rates of 1,400 to 1,500 Americans a day.
Yeah, the actual facts on the ground are indisputable. We are in for a bitter winter, it seems. Not just the pockets around the country, as we've known in previous stages of this pandemic in this country. Of course, this city, New York City, was the epicenter of it in April and May, and that, the numbers here were horrific. The scenes in the streets were horrific. The pile-up of temporary morgues around hospitals at the time was chilling to see. But now we're back to figures that are ramping up so fast that I think those scenes are likely to be repeated, not necessarily in New York City, which somehow or other seems to be keeping the situation tamped down on the whole, although, of course, we are having our localized spikes, too. But the disturbing thing is that even the White House's own so-called task force, headed up by Vice President Pence, is classifying states by color, of course, and what is known as the red zone now includes 42 out of our 52 states and territories are colored in the White House Task Force's classification as red, red for danger, I suppose, which leaves only 10 states and territories that are less than red, and of course their numbers are going up too, so that overall total is going to change. Now, the interesting thing about this zoning principle is something that the press have sort of glossed over. I mean, they mention the fact that the red zone is increasing in its number of member states, but this is not a public document. The publication of which states are in that red zone, it's a report that the task force makes and sends to state governors. It's not published. We only know about it because the Center for Public Integrity gets hold of it and publishes it. And that's another feature, if you like, of the Trump administration's handling of this COVID is that the public don't even know some of the most basic facts that, of course, the professionals dealing with the problem know, but are not allowed to make public. That apparently is going to change when the president-elect, and that's a term that we're all in the habit of using now, the president-elect, of course, will be Joe Biden, and when he becomes president, one of his promises is that he will publish daily, a daily updated dashboard, easy to understand dashboard, where the public can see what the real numbers are and how they're trending.
It's just amazing to look at it, and when you look at the track record of our country dealing with it, because we have 50 states and there's 50 different ways of dealing with it, not cohesive. But the really sad thing is now, when you look back, the task force that was formed just seems not to exist.
It's certainly sidelined. It exists. It is putting out these numbers for what it's worth, since they're not publicized. Not broadly publicized, and their professional advice is obviously spurned completely. Every Republican event, right up to the election night meeting, was conducted in conditions that were completely opposite to what the task force itself was proclaiming to the public, and this is something they did make public, the advice that, we should wear masks. Remember that? Remember the idea of wearing masks? I think we'll find it gaining a lot more currency now. It seems to have been abandoned by so many as a political, in a political manner, the politicization of mask wearing, which I heard termed by a doctor speaking only a couple of days ago, is rather like politicizing the use of toilet rolls. It's just a kind of insane step that we've come to in this country, where whether or not we wear a mask in the time of a highly contagious disease is a matter of what political line you follow. It's insane. It was interesting to see the comments of a Virginia Republican, a congressman, Representative Denver Riggleman of Virginia, who talked about his colleagues, his fellow Republicans, as having jumped on the crazy train, which is a nice piquant way of describing what his fellow Republicans are doing at the moment. He was referring in particular, of course, to Republicans who feel they cannot, dare not, perhaps, recognize in public the facts of the matter, which is that President-elect Biden is indeed President-elect, and that the Trump policy, if that's what you can call it, of ignoring that fact and indeed trying to fight it by misconceived legal actions in the court system is trying to get away with stating a truth which is unsustainable. Right. And even, I guess we ought to say, even the people at Trump's own Department of Homeland Security who are charged with the security of in particular the election system, and in particular the cyber aspects of that election system, declared only yesterday that it was the most secure election in U.S. history. Lots of people are turning away from the insanity of the Trump administration's last days, but of course many are not, because they're too scared to.
It's amazing how the Republican Party is so worried about 2024 that they don't want to upset the president. And, I have no problem.
And the president's followers. Yeah. I mean, that's the calculation for them, of course.
But they're also bringing to the fact that they don't want to jade one way or the other. The recount, the two races that are going to be run in Georgia for the Senate. But those issues aside, I have no president. I have no problem with the president if he wants to not follow protocol and concede. That's his right. But the basic fact that all the agencies were informed not to cooperate, that's the sticking point. I mean, if he wants his legacy to go down, that he's not going to follow something that's been done hundreds of years in this country, that's fine. But when he starts affecting the national security of the country and also blocking foreign countries from congratulating directly Joe Biden, that's just, you look at it and it seems so petty and so insignificant that somebody would do this, and really whatever reputation they have with whoever is tarnished.
Petty indeed. That's possibly the most apposite word you could possibly have chosen. He has every legal right to do it, but that's hardly the point. As you say, it's petty and it is obstructive of a process that has to take place. But then, in using these terms, we're forgetting the fact that Trump doesn't work by rationality. It's all a matter of personal pique. And that's why we end up with this sense of the crazy train chugging along. And of course, the by all appearances, all rational thought about the evidence will tell you that the likelihood of any of these legal cases he's pursuing changing the outcome of the election is zero to zilch. So quite what he thinks he's getting out of it, I don't know, except for this sort of vague emotional message to the followers that he's going down fighting. Much more rational, if that's at all relevant, if rationality is at all relevant here, is the actions of Republicans who can actually see the facts on the ground and draw the logical conclusions. I want to mark some journalism this week that that demonstrates this well, and I think it deserves our bugle fanfare if you have it to hand.
I do have it at hand. Hang on a second here. Let's make sure I've got it all set up right. Here we go.
Yeah, the bugle fanfare for valuable journalism contribution of the week is shared, in my mind, between the Wall Street Journal opinion pages, which at other times can seem unhinged right-wing ranting, but now and again just hits the mark correctly, and it does so with the individual who's sharing this award this week from us. Karl Rove, the Republican operative, you remember, who was once known as George W. Bush's brain. So what occasions this award is an op-ed that Karl Rove wrote for the Wall Street Journal, which is given the plain and simple headline, "This election result won't be overturned." And just arguing the obvious points, but they need to be stressed, apparently, and especially stressed to Republicans, Mr. Rove thinks, it's essentially that to win, Mr. Trump must now prove systematic fraud. With illegal votes that number up to tens of thousands, and of course that's just not happening. and his chances in court, the president's chances in court, will decline even more, Rove says, when the states start certifying results. Georgia will on November 20th, Pennsylvania and Michigan will again themselves on the 23rd, and Arizona the 30th, and Wisconsin and Nevada in December, very early in December, December 1st, I think, in both cases of Wisconsin and Nevada. So you will get states, electoral college electors committed to the Biden side of the column, and it's a done deal. And it's clear, in terms of Rove's own argument, that the president should, well, I'll quote Karl Rove. He says that the president should do his part to unite the country by leading a peaceful transition and letting grievances go. That sounds like, I think the award goes for useful and valuable journalism, but I think we should also give Karl Rove, in this particular case, the Common Sense Award of the Week as well. The way that it's going is so obvious, and yet the flailing that is taking place against this reality and the inevitability of it all is pitiful to see.
Yeah, it's just, and the long-term effect on what it does to the psyche of this country and the people that are in it. I mean, when you look at an election where Joe Biden is probably going to win by about 6 million votes. He's going to get roughly 76 to 77 million votes. And Donald Trump is going to get 70 to 71 million votes. Now, this is a huge victory on the part of Joe Biden up against an incumbent president. But when you look at, there's still 71 million people that voted for Donald Trump. And out of that 71 million, you know there's just most of them are very hardcore followers. you have turned those 71 million people now over the long term to doubt really our the basis of our democracy, which is our election system.
Sure. What you may have may not be every single individual in that 71 million, but there will be a massive slew of the nation that will be in a state of mind that Trump often himself would attribute to his opponents when he'd call them disgruntled, and especially disgruntled ex-employees. We're all but in January the 21st, we will all be ex-employers of Trump, and 71 million people of us could be classed, in a broad brushstroke terms, as disgruntled. And if you have a large slice of your population disgruntled, you have a political problem. Now, whether it's lasting is, I think, one of the questions that the people that we pay to take care of our political affairs have an awful responsibility to take care of. It's interesting to hear the former ambassador to the United Nations, John Bolton, and the National Security Advisor for a while, too, until he, too, got fired. Not a man whose assessments, I can say, as someone who worked at the United Nations for a long time, I ever found particularly impressive. But he made a strong point yesterday in saying that it is profoundly damaging to America to have gotten itself to this state. But he was firm in saying that it's something we can get over. I hope he's right, but I have this awful feeling, as you were voicing just then, that given the size of the Trumpists, the bulk that they occupy in the body politic now, like some sort of corpulent kind of growth in our body politic, is sizable, and it may not be a passing fad at all. In fact, I've been saying this for some time, but Trump is not in himself the problem. Trump is someone who is representative of, and in a way sort of symptomatic of, a much wider problem. The loss of faith in institutions, the sense of people being passed by, that somehow or other the country is changing in a way that is unfavorable to their interests, and cannot find a way of dealing with the new realities of American life. All of that is something that goes a lot more deeper than one man with peculiar hair and peculiar facial coloring.
I tell you, when you look at what we're going through as a country and as a world, it really is. The exciting is the wrong time wrong term to use, but there's so much going on at this particular time.
Let's just call it a stirring time.
Yeah. As someone who is now an American citizen, but was a citizen of Great Britain, and you look, how is the rest of the world looking at our elections this year? I mean, do you have any feel on that?
Oh, yes. people are shaking their heads and mopping their brow in a way. I mean, I think in Europe especially, but this is pretty universal across the world, apart from a few dictatorships, which are kind of chilled a bit to see that their fellow, or their aspirant at least, potential fellow member, Trump. He's trying now some of the tactics that dictators around the world have often tried when the electoral prospects and electoral results when it comes to their populations voting against them has to be faced up to. Many of them will dispute it and have disputed it in just the way that Trump is doing this now. So with the exception of the dictator class, if you like, around the world, most countries are looking at what's going on here and many of them are doing the obvious thing and congratulating Biden on being the president-elect. That's at the official level, but in the general sort of public opinion level, as evidenced in the media, which is of course how I filter things, you will see a unanimity about the sensation of God, thank God that's over, or at least they hope that it's over. And they can see only the kickings and flailings, as I say, of a man who can't face reality. There's an unusual unanimity. I haven't seen anything quite so much of a demonstration of unison around the world in its reaction to Trump's defeat. But at the same time, there is much of the feeling that you yourself were voicing, Marshall. There's a concern about what's happened to America's standing. In some ways, it's prompted. Thoughts that are interesting, so to say the least, about how to handle the future. Germany, for instance, the powerhouse of Europe, has now come to the conclusion that America may well recover from this and may well become a better ally. But at the same time, the shock impact of 4 years, the continuing shock impact of Trump almost from his first day has been that, as Chancellor Angela Merkel has said, Germany now has to take its own position into account more than anything else, and a sense that America is no longer going to be, in their view, so reliable as they regarded it as being ever since 1945. I think in one sense there is bound to be a long-lasting effect, if only in the level of people's caution about America. They're never going to look towards America with quite the same dewy-eyed admiration that some countries have demonstrated before.
You know, that's not necessarily a bad thing, which makes...
No, absolutely not.
Which makes the European Union itself in a stronger position. But I think that over time, the United States can once again get back up to being a world leader by joining all these things that we've dropped out on. I mean, whether you like it or not, it's a small world nowadays. And if you're one of the major countries in the world, along with China and stuff like that, you need to participate in all these plans that have been instituted, from the Iran nuclear option to the Paris climate accord. I mean, we have to be participants in that, whether or not we fully agree with it, simply because if you want to be a world leader, you've got to be, you really have to be involved with world leaders.
Sure, if you want a world doing what you want it to do, it's best to combine your efforts, even if they may involve disagreements, with your fellow members of that world. Do you want to be on the inside making change, or do you want to go it alone? One of the most telling, I think, journalistic turns of phrase, which ended up as a political slogan almost, which Biden was quick to pick up on and use himself during the campaign, was of putting America first, to use the Trumpian phrase, in fact turns into making America alone. And that doesn't work in the modern world. I don't think it ever would have done in any point of history. But one of America's great achievements when it was newly independent was to assert itself in the world, was to get involved, and having allies like France was crucial to the early republic's survival. Getting involved in the world and playing your full responsible part is something that we can hope that America will return to doing. But if I can just talk about the international reaction to America a little further, one of the, again, you know, to get guidance on that, we look to the rest of the world's media. And one clear thing that's been made very evident since the kerfuffle over Trump refusing to accede to defeat and publicly conceded, the press around the world are talking about the American press in different terms now. They're saying, perhaps with a thought, well, it's better late than never, but the American press is pleased to see the international press is pleased to see the American press now calling out, emboldened is the term I keep seeing. They believe the American press is now newly emboldened to call out Trump's falsehoods. I think it's a little unfair. I mean, the implicit criticism here is that for 4 years, the American press has been giving Trump something of a free pass. Now, many in the international press, the European press and in particular perhaps the British press, have a much stronger track record of being highly critical of their own leaders. And it's felt, in Europe at least, that sometimes the American press can get a little soft with its leaders, and when they were confronted by the excesses and the outrageousness of this president, they should have done a better job at calling him out and restraining him in public. Now, I don't know how possible that would have been. We know that individual press organs like the New York Times, the Washington Post, and CNN were pretty active during these last 4 years in documenting Trump's falsehoods and calling him out on them. I think one criticism you might make about them is that they sometimes got the tone wrong and ended up getting overly aggressive in the terms in which they conducted their reporting. I've been worried about the Washington Post in particular, and sometimes the Times, and most of all CNN, who seemed to turn it into a kind of mano-a-mano conflict a lot of the time. Not that Trump wasn't playing his part in doing that too, but overall, I think Trump did get something of a complicit press corps, in the sense that for a long time people didn't quite know how to deal with someone who's so far from the norm, and almost didn't dare do it. Might be the phrase, but more like didn't know how to. It's more like a case of just not knowing how you handle this madman in our midst. And eventually, I think we settled down to some form of appropriate check and balance role from the press. And now, in these last flailing weeks that are left, we're seeing a lot more straightforward blockage of Trump's excrescences and the press doing its job and saying, no, this is not true, and we must now, take the next step. And here's what's and this is the important thing for a journalist to do. Here's what's really going on. That kind of reporting is reasserting itself now, and I'm glad to see it.
You know, and what the press is also doing there is they're making up. I mean, the press in this country was partially responsible for Donald Trump. Every time he spoke, they put full-length speeches on. I'm surprised Republicans didn't complain to all the networks, because no one else got the coverage that Donald Trump did in the run-up to the primaries and through the primaries.
Oh, sure. He was the primary candidate that was catnip for television ratings in particular, and that was inevitable. And I think it's a very substantial responsibility that lies on the heads of the media for creating the myth of Trump as a showman, as well as a successful, was that the word, businessman. remember, he was created, his opportunity for this power grab was enabled by NBC turning him into a star, playing a part that he wasn't in real life at all acquitted to perform, that of a accomplished businessman.
You know, it's and the press obviously has tried to make up for it by dismantling him, and that's you know, I'm glad they finally got around to covering other things other than Donald Trump, but obviously in this last year and a half, even Fox pulled away from some of these conferences now, and upset the president simply because the amount of lies has always been there, but the significance of the importance of the lies and how it affected the Constitution even forced Fox to cut away from that press conference. And now the president's favorite news network is this news network called Newsmax.
Oh, indeed. Well, he's long liked it. They have a very intimate relationship. So I think we'll see that in the days of Trump's role in opposition, whatever that turns out to be.
Oh, I love that. You put that very nicely, David. In his role as opposition. In his role of opposition to Republicans and Democrats. That's
absolutely, yes. It'll be a Trump party in its own right, I suspect. Not formally a party, but we'll know that slice of the community who did support him will be cultivated in an ongoing way by Trump in some form or other, maybe his own TV channel, we don't know, but don't be surprised by anything along those lines.
All right, David, it's always great to speak to you. We're still alive, we're still operating, and thank God the elections are in the rearview mirror now. It's how we handle COVID and how we get back into function with the rest of the world. We'll speak to you next week, David.
Absolutely.
David Tarachuk with the Media Beat here on Robin Hood Radio. Once again, you can find David at his own website, themediabeat.us, themediabeat.us.